Hey guys, JB here, the Wolf of Wall Street in the Wolf's Den. New location today. For those of you watching on video, see my pool, Hollywood Hills. Actually, West Hollywood Hills here. Got a great guest today. This is a really interesting guest because he's someone that's in the world of sales in real estate. And he's specializing in supplying flippers of homes with homes, but it's actually a core sales skill, and he's doing really, really well. And I thought it'd be really good to bring someone like this on to get a sense of what goes on behind the scenes of real estate. Everyone always hears about all these people making money and flipping homes and whatnot, but this sort of demystifies where all these homes are coming from, what the supply is all about, how people are making money. And also, I think whichever side of the table you're on, whether you are the person that's being sold to or the salesman, there's a lot to be learned here because there's a lot of strategy that Steve Trang, that's his name, the guy in the show, is explaining here. And people, homeowners, need to understand that, you know, if you put yourself in a position where your home is about to be foreclosed on, well, you're going to have people come into your home, and you got to understand how the game works to either decide to work with someone or protect yourself and not sell your home at too low of a price. But either way, he was a nice guy, very sharp, interesting take on selling. I agree with most of what he said. Some of the stuff I thought was a bit too abrupt, but I'm going to let it present itself here. We'll hear from Steve Trang in about 60 seconds. But first, quick word from our sponsors. All right, want to grow your business, diversify your content? You're not going to find a better tool out there than Melon for your live streaming needs. Blazing fast response time, low CPU usage, all available right in your browser. Go to melonapp.com/wolf and start streaming today. All right, Steve Trang, thanks for coming on the show here.
Thanks for having me.
So I love having another, you know, sales trainer on the show, someone that really understands the world of sales. So I want to first give people some background here on, you know, how you got started in the world of sales, what sectors you're in, and then we'll get specifically into your style and how you mentor people and some of the successes you've had, what challenges you're facing, and there you go. So start at the beginning. So how'd you get into the world of sales?
I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and I wanted to invest in real estate, and along the way I kind of got distracted. So instead of becoming a real estate investor, I became a real estate agent, right? But in along that way, you had to learn how to sell. And you can imagine the transition going from engineering to real estate sales. It was a very tough transition. And I screwed up for a very long time. But I worked my way through because we were willing to market however much we needed to market to get business.
Right.
I was really effective in marketing for the first 10 years of my business. And right. It wasn't until recently that I started learning about sales. As I learned about sales, like, wow, this is a whole nother world that no one talks about. It's an art form, or everyone thinks it's an art form. There's an actual science behind it. Right. There's an actual method, a process behind all of it. So I've been geeking out on.
In other words, the idea that like there's marketing on one side of the equation, mm-hmm. right? Sales on the other.
Right.
Marketing brings people in to the funnel so you can potentially close them using sales, right?
Exactly.
When did you first come to that realization that if I improve my ability to sell, it will just, you know, just take my business up to the stars? When was that?
Oh man, I always knew it. And you know, what's funny is that for a lot of my career, like I said, I was really lousy at sales. So I would just hire salespeople, right? I would market people, I'd get them to raise their hand, get them to their door, and I would send other people that were comfortable pushing the prospect a little harder than I felt pushing,
right?
Because I didn't feel comfortable pushing. So it wasn't until the last 3 years that I was like, oh wait, there's a way that we can do this where we both win. It's not pushy.
Right.
We find your solution, we figure out if I can provide that solution, and it's a win-win situation for everybody. So I would say I always knew it. I just didn't know how to do it.
So you think it's a misconception, the idea that a salesperson who's effective is to also be pushy?
I mean, that's kind of what you think though, right? I mean, there's a reason why you talk about sales. No one looks up to salespeople, right? Like we're always down there with like the attorneys or above attorneys, but not by much.
Anyone's above an attorney, right?
Yeah.
So I think I've said in the past many times, like people love to buy shit, but hate to get sold to.
Exactly.
So the idea is when you're a salesperson is you're helping people make the right buying decisions. But if you're perceived as someone that's kind of ramming anything down someone's throat, probably is not going to end up in a closed sale.
Oh, right? Yeah. You're losing rapport the whole time as you're pushing forward.
So when you first, what year was it when you first sort of said, you know, kind of, you know what, I get it. I've always known intuitively that selling is crucial, but you made a decision in your own life to really become an expert yourself. When was that?
You know, it all happened by accident. You know, for me, when I was trying to buy some additional houses, we were trying to wholesale more houses, which is just buying houses at a discounted price and selling them before closing at a higher price. And so I wanted to be surrounded by other individuals doing the same thing.
Right.
Right. And along the way, I found that they're just hanging out in this guy's sales training operation. So there's a sales trainer in town. And I was like, okay, well, I want to hang out with you guys. I don't even care where you guys are hanging out. You guys can hang out at the bar. You can be hanging out at the golf club.
Right.
I don't care where you're hanging out. I want to hang out with you guys.
Right.
But I'm sitting in this room with this other sales trainer. I was like, wait a minute. Everything I've been trying to do in sales, like, this guy's resolving. So it wasn't even like I was seeking it, but I found it and I geeked out on it. I was been studying it really hard, nonstop for the last 3 years.
Okay, and so what's the basic methodology by which that you use to sell? What's your philosophy?
Our philosophy now is really just uncovering, right, what the prospect wants. And then along the way, as we're uncovering, trying to figure out whether we're the right people to be able to fulfill that. I think that, you know, if we look at the way I describe it, it's kind of like a sketch artist, right? I need to figure out what Jordan wants. If I can figure out what Jordan wants, really understand to a deeper level, to a point where I can draw your problem and I can draw and articulate your ideal solution. If I can do that, then we create an incredible amount of rapport. And at that time, we can figure out whether I have the solution that fits your problem.
So in terms, right, that makes sense, right? I think the problem with a lot of sales programs is like that's what you just said is a basic truth, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So obviously, if you know exactly what someone's problem is, right, and you understand exactly what their solution is, and then you can fill that solution elegantly, right? That's the job of a salesman. But the question is, how do you do that?
So
like, what's the actual strategy? So how does someone, because here's the thing, you have two types of people in the world, then you have everyone in between. You have people like myself, who was born a salesperson. I was like a natural born salesperson. Not the only one.
I read
one
your book.
Right, well, I'm not the only one in the world, yeah. But there's some, but mm-hmm. not a lot. Then you have people who are just like awful. But then you have everyone in the middle.
Yeah.
Like at varying degrees of natural talent.
Yeah.
And the further you go down the talent pool, the more difficult and challenging it gets, because to do what you just said, which is a truth, and I agree with what you said, but it's like easier said than done. How do you do that? So that's the question.
Sure.
So do you teach the how?
We teach the how.
So how does the how, let's go start at the beginning of the how. How does the how work?
Well, it's just questioning strategies, right? So I think a lot of it is, and there's, we've heard over and over again, the 70-30 principle, right? You know, God gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. But just because you explain it at a high level, we don't really know how to pull that information. So one thing we do a lot of is we ask a lot of questions, and we ask a lot of what and how questions versus yes, no questions, which you also see in a lot of sales books. But a lot of the other things we do are assumptive statements. You know, I'll label, you know, it's like, sounds like caught you really bad time, or, you know, you seem really busy. And just making these simple statements, someone will correct you, or, you know, I'm pushing you away a little bit, and you're like, well, I'm not that busy. It's like, you probably got this all figured out. Like, well,
so some sort of modified takeaway sale where you sort
absolutely
of, right.
Yeah.
So you're saying, you know, maybe I'm not the right fit for you. Maybe this is a bad time for you to make them want it more, because people
exactly.
kind of want what they can't have.
For sure. So okay. There's a lot of takeaway. There's a lot of asking further questions. Someone makes a statement, you know, the example I use a lot of is someone asks you how long you've been in the business. And for me, the longest time in my career is like, how long have you been in business? Well, I've been in business 8 years. And that was like my answer, right? But when people ask you how long you've been in business, what they really want to know is, are you really qualified to help mm-hmm. me? So someone asks me how long you've been in business. Now I ask them, you know, that's an interesting question. I'm curious, like, you know, what brings this up right now? And it's like, well, I want to make sure the person I work with has the ability to actually, you know, buy my house. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, that makes sense, Jordan. What would you need to see to feel comfortable knowing that I have the ability to buy your home? And they might say, you know, I want to see a bank statement. I want to see a list of houses that you bought. I want to see some testimonials. But now I know what you want, and now I can fulfill that. Versus, oh, I've been in the business 7 years. I've been in the business 10 years, which gives you no satisfaction whatsoever. Because, you know, being in the business 20 years means absolutely nothing. There are a lot of idiots that survived
right.
for 20 years.
Got it. Let's go back for a second. So I want to get a bit more granular here. So you have marketing on one side.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that's done well, right? So you have
yeah.
a steady supply of leads coming
sure.
in, right? So every day you have X number of people you're going to call, And then depending on what your sales cycle is, you might speak to them once, twice, three times before you close them, right?
Right.
All right. So for those people on the first call, do you have a set way to approach those people? In other words, what you're teaching people is like as granular as like, here's the first words that you're going to say to a prospect, mm-hmm. some version of that. Yep. Or is it more just like, say what comes to your mind and
no,
only like
no,
at certain
no say
points.
What's coming into your mind. Okay. Absolutely not.
Right.
No,
so you believe in sort of the idea of, even though it's face-to-face, having some sort of script, your own mind sort of scripted, sort of a best guess of how the sale's going to flow.
Yeah. So I think the first off, you know, again, your book, right? The first 4 seconds.
Right.
You got to set a first impression. So I always learn 7 seconds, but whatever it is, right? First few seconds.
Well, here's the thing. It's a good point because I always make a joke of that because I said 4 seconds in like 1988 and then Harvard said they did a study and it was 7 seconds. So they're probably right.
Right.
Because they did a study because Harvard can't be wrong. I said, well, I still feel good. I beat him by like 29 years. But,
but I
maybe it was 4 or 7. I had this with Chris Bach like a lot, by the way.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So whether it's 4 seconds, it doesn't matter. The point is the first few seconds, right? You got to make an impression, right?
You got to capture. So the first thing is, right off the bat, when I call you, we're going to call you like you're my buddy, right? It's going to be, hey, Jordan. It's not going to be, hi, Mr. Belfort there.
Right.
Because, you know, when your friends call you or your mom calls you, it's never, hey, is Mr. Belfort there?
Right.
You know, acting all soft.
Right.
I'm going to call you with confidence.
So check. So you call up more of a friendly perspective than the, hi, Mr. Belfort. Okay, right.
Right.
Agreed, right?
So the first thing.
Right.
The second thing is, I'm going to say, you know, my name is Steve Trang. I was in your neighborhood, probably caught you at a bad time.
Okay.
And now I was like, well, no, it's not that bad a time. But what we used to do is you used to ask, is now a good time, right? Another classic salesperson move.
Right.
It's like, it's a bad time. Click.
Okay.
Right? Or is now a bad time? You know, you learn you want to give ask negative questions. Is now a bad time? And then you might get some more power there. But now we just tell everyone it's a bad time.
Go back a step. So in other words, explain to me, I guess, this, just to create context, the marketing strategy that you're using is creating what? It's incoming. How do you deal with that as well?
So we do that as well. But what I'm talking right now is cold calling.
Okay, so this is a cold call now. So you're just calling a guy that's never responded.
Never raised his hand.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Good.
So we tell him it's a bad time. And this, well, it's not a bad time. What's this about? But now we've got curiosity. And now we've got engagement. And the things we're looking for is pattern interrupts, right? So the first thing I called you, like we're friends, telling you it's a bad time. Now you're like, what is going on? Because we're all busy. Well, maybe not busy, but we got a lot of things going on in our heads, right? We got work, we got emails, we got our cell phone, we got social media, got all these distractions. And our goal is to get your full attention in the first 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And once we have your full attention, now we're going to set the expectations for the call. Say, hey, you know, it's going to take about 30 seconds. You know, can I share with you what some of the other homeowners have told us? And then from that, we can... More
what would
relaxed.
This be a call for, just to create context? Is this a call for someone that you might want them to sell their house? Is that what this is?
We're calling to find people that want to sell their house. So we buy houses, right? So we're calling people that are distressed, need to sell the house fast for cash. That's our targeted market.
Got it. All right. So you call someone up and you're like, probably not a good time, right? And then you're like, but, and then you say, you introduce yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, what?
Can I take 30 seconds? Tell you why I called, and you let me know whether we should keep the conversation going.
Okay. Do you say in there something like, listen, you know, what you do for a living or what the perspective is? Why are you calling them?
We will. Once they say, well, you know, yes, if they say they got 30 seconds, we'll tell them what we called.
Okay.
They say no.
But then, so at that point, they don't know if you're like a vacuum cleaner salesman or looking to buy the house.
They have no idea.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, can I take 30 seconds to hear why I called? And like, sure, what's this about? Well, homeowners that have sold to us, they were frustrated dealing with the bank. Tired of dealing with the HOA overall, just don't want to deal with a realtor. Don't suppose any of those apply to you, right? That's a negative takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
And these people we know are distressed. We know they need to sell. And they're like, well, actually, and that kind of keeps, and that's when we start the conversation.
Okay.
Right. But let's say they say, oh, no, you know, I'm not interested. Then we'll just follow up with, and you probably don't have any other properties that or pieces of land you've thought about selling, right? We're just doing more takeaways and say, well, no. It's like, do you know anyone else that, you know, probably don't know anyone else that's thinking about selling? Say no, and then that's it. And we move on. And this goes back to that question I heard you ask before, but how long should you stay on the prospect, right, before we move on?
Right. So I guess, what do you have some sort of rule of thumb for doing that with people?
Yeah. So what we do is we just keep taking it away. And if they allow us to take it away, then we move on, right? If they're not fighting for us to stick around, if they're not demonstrating that they need us in any capacity,
right,
we're not going to try to sell somebody. Because I think what a lot of amateur salespeople out there do is they're trying to convince people.
Sure.
I got to get this guy. I got to close this guy, or I'm not gonna be able to eat, right? But if this guy actually disqualify, if I actively disqualify this guy, sure. I have to do more prospecting.
Right.
I have to do more marketing.
Right.
Is this fear out there? So they'd rather just hold on to this deal that's sure. not even a deal.
Right. So the big, it's a very good point, right? So one of the things I think the biggest problems is that many young salespeople, and all the salespeople too, I mean young in their career, I don't mean age-wise, right? They don't understand how crucial it is to have a steady supply of new deals potentially coming in, new people absolutely. To call. Because what happens is, it's in the there's two things that cause people to hang on to deals too long. The first is they just hate the cold call. So the idea is they just like, if I let this guy go, I got to just start and get, right? That's one deal. But the other side is they don't have anyone to call.
Yeah,
they just don't have a pipeline because they haven't actually, they don't have a strategy that's sustainable that allows them to keep like sort of, okay, every new day I'm going to have, you know, X number of people. So no one individual, you know, means that much to me versus if I have like only these 8 deals, I'll keep calling the same freaking people again and again and again. Right. Yeah. I'm sure you see that, right?
Oh, we see it all the time. And the worst of it is, you know, with the brokerage side, we got agents as well. Like there's nothing more satisfying. I don't know if you experienced this. There's nothing more satisfying than firing a crappy client, right? Someone that's taking too much of your time, right. always complaining, never grateful, always dissatisfied. Sure. And man, a full pipeline
right.
empowers you.
Is to that, let those is that your business though? So was that what you actually do? You help real estate agents find potential deals. Is that your business?
So I'm a real estate, I own a brokerage, I own a title company. I have a sales training program where I help other people. I train other people on how to buy houses. So I have the brokerage. We also buy houses, right, in Phoenix. So what we teach is what we actually do. You know, there's right. a lot of guys out there that teach theory, right, teach out of a book, never actually sold anything in their lives. We teach what we actually do.
Okay. So I guess my point was I think you have a platform. Mm-hmm. So, like, is part of what you do give people, like, every single day they can pay and get leads from you, or no, it's not what you do?
No, we are not a lead provider. I have okay. no interest in being a lead provider. I've done that too.
You have done that.
And fired a lot of clients on that side, right?
Okay.
Because if they can't close a deal, it's my fault. It's like, no, those are right. active leads. Those are real leads, right? And you can't close 100% of them, but you can't close zero and right. blame me.
So who is your client? Forget the people that, not on the house side, on the mentorship side. So what are you looking for?
So we're looking for people right now that are buying houses. You know, people that are actively marketing, having people raising their hands, expressing interest.
Would be flippers.
Would be suppliers to flippers. So there's people that flip, and there's people that feed the houses to the flippers. So HGTV glorifies flippers, right? I mean, you got this couple and that's crushing on this house. They made $150,000 on this house. No one talks about how that house was found, which was a wholesaler who's calling a probate list, a divorce list, a foreclosure list, someone that has to do all the dirty work. And the wholesalers are viewed as vultures, right? No one looks at it as a wholesaler as like, oh man, this guy's doing good work. It's always
not
like,
doing God's work there as
no,
a wholesaler.
No, they're always like, this guy's taking advantage of grandma. So we glorify the flipper. We glorify the realtor that sells it, right? But we're always like shooting that guy that's finding the deals like he's an ambulance chaser.
God. Okay. So essentially, that's probably the most important guy. In the
that's
end
the
day.
Guy that feeds the entire operation. He feeds the title company, feeds the loan officers.
So what you're doing is you're going out there and you're convincing people to sell you their homes and mm-hmm. then you're selling that to the flipper?
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So you're wholesale to flippers.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
And what's the average price point of a home that you would look to buy, and how much of a discount to the market does it be at?
A typical property for us, you know, we're looking at houses in Phoenix. The median home is about 330. So we're looking to buy houses that are in the 180 price point and try to buy them for about 130. So we contract it for about 130.
Okay.
And we'll sell it to someone else. They'll buy it for 145 and then they'll do all the flip work.
Okay. So seeing the house is worth 180.
Mm-hmm.
You want to buy it at 130.
Correct.
And flip it at 145. So you'll make, you know, 10, 15% markup somewhere on there.
Yeah, 15,000. Yeah.
And how easy is that to do? In the sense, like, in other words, is it simply a matter of a numbers game? If you know how to do that, you call 20 people for, what's the numbers on it?
So what we find is about, if you have, if you talk to 100 people, people that should be selling their house, right? Not 100 random people on white pages. 100 people that should be selling their houses.
And why should they be selling?
Because they're facing pre-foreclosure. Their house is a mess where the city is fining them.
Why? Like they're freaking what? They're like just maniacs? Just
overgrown. Overgrown yards.
Like they can't mow their lawn and
can't
shit.
Mow their lawns. Roof is falling apart. Yeah, exactly.
Substandard electricity in the house, like that sort of stuff.
Yeah, where the city is sending them letters, right? People that didn't pay their tax liens or tax bill, right? If you're not paying the city, if you're not paying Uncle Sam or the state,
eventually they'll take your house.
Well, they're going to send you notices. So we'll approach the homeowners after the first notice, right? We don't want to wait the 3 years for the city to take the house back.
Sure.
So this person's expressed that they're or shown that they have to sell their house or they're in financial despair.
Got it.
And that's who we reach out to.
Okay, got it. So for every 10 people, let's say every 50 people you call, how many of them like just like not interested, hang up on you?
Oh, almost all of them.
Okay.
Right? Like 90%.
So let's go out of 100. Okay, so out of 100 people, how many conversations will you actually get into?
10.
10. So, okay, so about 10% of them are open to the idea of potentially selling the house, right?
Interesting.
Is it mostly they've fallen hard times financially? Are they lazy?
It's not laziness. It's accidental landlords, right? People that thought maybe I couldn't sell my house, I'll rent it out.
Got it.
And then they're like, wow, being a landlord sucks.
Right.
Right. Or it could be they lost their job. I mean, COVID hurt a lot of people. So they're falling behind.
Okay.
Or someone's sick, you know, and they can't take care of whoever they need to. I could tell you there's one house that I remember I bought where she needed to sell because her mom was diagnosed with breast cancer in another part of the country. Mm-hmm. And she needed to be with mom tomorrow. Right.
In that case, you're doing God's work.
Well, and that's the thing, right? We're always seen as vultures, but I can tell you, on the realtor side, we've done over 1,000 transactions, right? Okay. On the buying houses side, you know, less than 100. The people that you buy their houses at a steep price, at a steep discount, love you, right? They appreciate you because you helped them out of a tough situation.
Sure.
The people that on the traditional side, where you're listing their house and selling it for top dollar, well, it took too long.
Right.
And I had to replace the thermostat, right? Yeah, yeah. And the appraisal came in low. Like, I could control the appraiser, right?
Got it. So 100 people are on a list. Mm-hmm. 90 will just say, fuck you, I'm not selling my house. Yeah. You know, right? Mm-hmm. 10 people exactly. Are like, well, how much? What do they say? I don't know. What will you give me? How does it go?
That's exactly. It's like you're listening to them. Yeah, it's like, what's your offer, right?
And then you say, well, you know.
I don't know.
What do you say? Like, you know, listen, I know I've done some research in the area and the average comp in your area is one.
We don't do any
educating.
Tell me what
you do. What's the strategy?
We just tell them, I don't know. Like, what's your offer? I don't know. They're like, what do you mean you don't know? You're calling me like, well, I just, at this point, I was just seeing if you're even interested in selling your home.
Okay, I'm interested.
Okay, great. So then we'll start talking about why you'd even be interested. You know, Jordan, like what? Why would you even be interested?
I got a tax and I want to sell this before it goes into foreclosure and I'm screwed and it's worth even less.
That makes total sense. And at that point, we'll schedule the appointment.
Okay. Right. So then it goes into a in-person appointment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. And in the heart of the worst times of COVID, did you ever start doing that virtually? You always did it in person?
We did a few virtually. You know, we live in Arizona. Like COVID didn't happen. Obviously, we got struck pretty bad for a while. But as if COVID didn't happen.
Got it. Okay. So is it Scottsdale?
We're predominantly Phoenix. Scottsdale, we don't really buy so many. Some, but not so much because the price points are a lot higher, and to get a 30% discount on a $600,000 home, it's a lot of money. Most homeowners in that price point have some other options.
Got it. Okay. So the idea is that basically it's a cold call to get to the house for an in-person first call close or?
Yeah. Once we get in the house, we want to close it right then and there. And then that's the other part where we talk about as far as our sales program. I think if you look at every situation where a client and a salesperson, where they were upset is because they were unmet expectations. And the reason why they're unmet expectations is because no one set the proper expectations, right? So when we buy a house, we go to a homeowner's house, typically in their mind, they just want to shop, right? Like, why don't you walk through my house, tell me what your number is. That's what they expect, which is understandable, right? But if we go and operate on that system, we're not going to win many transactions.
Right.
So our goal is to set the proper expectations. Hey, Jordan, I appreciate you wanting me to walk around the house. Can I share with you how these meetings normally go? We established the rules of the meeting, and that basically at the end of the meeting, it's going to be yes or no.
So how does that go? Be more specific.
So you say, so hey, Jordan, can I share with you how these meetings normally go?
Absolutely.
So first of all, thank you for inviting me to your beautiful home. It's an amazing home. All right.
With the roaches fucking right, pulling down lights. Okay. Right.
But, you know, these meetings, they generally go by an hour. Is that still a good amount of time for you?
Yeah.
Typically, homeowners I meet with, they want to know what is it we do exactly, how much money they're going to get, and how soon they're going to get the money.
Okay.
Am I missing anything?
Nope.
Awesome. Obviously, I want to make sure there's a good fit for you, good fit for me. I'm going to be asking you some questions. Some of these questions might come across kind of personal. Will that be okay?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. And at the end, naturally, one of two things is going to happen. Either we buy your home or we don't. Either way, it's totally fine. You know, if at any point you feel like our price is not good enough for you, or you're just not convinced I'm the guy, could you do me a favor? Just tell me no. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not going to buy your home, are you going to be okay if I tell you that?
Absolutely. I'll survive.
All right, perfect. And if it does make sense,
does anyone ever say to you, no, I'll be, has anyone ever said to you, no, my kids are not going to eat, or is everyone just yes to you to death, basically?
No one's going to say reject
it. Right. Sure, yep. That's great. Okay.
But we're telling them that we might tell them.
No, I get it. Right, sure. Yeah.
Okay. And then if it makes sense for us to work together, what that means, we're going to take everything we talk about today, and we're going to go ahead and put that in writing. Is that fair?
Yep, sounds good.
And, you know, Jordan, you seem really nice. Some of the homeowners that we talked to in the past, they really want to protect my feelings. They're afraid to tell me no, and they would just tell me I need to think about it. Can you promise me you won't do that?
Sure.
And if I hear anything besides a yes, I'm just going to go ahead and take that as a no.
What if I just want to think about it, though?
What would you need to think about?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard the whole presentation yet, but once you get it, I might just need to think it over or talk to someone else. Is that okay? I don't want to sharpshoot. Does anyone ever say that to you? Or they don't?
They say it.
Okay. I would think so.
But what we're doing here is we're going to say, like, at this point, it's going to be a yes or a no. And if you're telling me right now it's not going to be yes or a no, I'm leaving.
Okay.
Because my time is too valuable to just educate you, right? It's like, here's what the home is worth and this and that. Like, if you're telling me that, like, you're incapable of selling your house today, we're leaving.
Okay.
Because we're in a house buying business. We're not in the, you know, let's hang out business.
Right. I'm not trying to convince you. I'm just going to make you an offer. The driver's wrong, and that's that.
Right.
Okay. Keep going.
Yeah. So that's basically it.
Okay. And then, so what do you do now? You walk around the house? What do you do?
Then we start figuring out, well, Jordan, what's going on? Like, why am I even here? Your house is beautiful. Why am I even here?
Okay. Well, I lost my job because of COVID, and I'm behind in the mortgage. I didn't pay my taxes, and eventually I want to get out of here. And so I figured, fuck it. I stopped. I thought it was just skip a couple of payments, and it got away from me, and now it's just too long, and I'm too deep. So I kind of like just got to get the fuck out of here.
Got it. Well, what have you done about that?
Well, I let you come here, so you're the first person I've spoken to.
Oh, I appreciate that. How long has this been going on?
Maybe 9 months or so.
Got it. And what would happen if we're unable to buy your home?
Well, eventually I'll probably sell it to someone at some point, you know, but I could probably, you know, I'm not like under the gun right now. I could stay here another year, honestly. Nothing's going to happen. Yeah. Is that true or not?
Depends on the state. Oh, California, probably.
I thought right now there's a moratorium.
Yeah, California, you can probably stick around forever.
Kill you, right.
Yeah.
It's a disaster.
But in Arizona,
landlords that are getting killed.
Yeah, you know? But in Arizona, no, you can still get foreclosed on. So I would say, you know.
Well, how does it work? How long is the right answer typically? Is it like I can make it another 6 months or a year or?
Well, if we get to this point, you're up against the gun, right?
Oh, really? It's that bad for them?
Yeah. So for them to meet with someone like us, they're out of options.
I want to keep this role play typical. I want to make sure it's accurate. So what would the typical person say? I got 90 days left, or what do they say?
Delusional.
No.
Oh, yeah, they got the delusional.
I'm sure, like, some people are delusional, right?
Right. So typically when we meet with someone, they've got about a month, 2 months max.
Okay, got it.
Right.
All right. And did they say that or no?
Oh, no. They keep their cards. Like, they don't know.
What do they say?
I've got time.
Right. Okay.
It's like, okay, so
they say what I said, right?
Yeah, I got time. Right. Yeah, great. So, you know, 2 months, 3 months goes by and you can't sell your house, like, it's not a big deal.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Do you ever seed before you go through that, do you ever like paint the picture that, you know, one of the true beauties of what I do is that, you know, I like to get to people before the problem gets too bad, because there's this really weird thing that happens, this declining value of your home. As you approach the end days when everyone knows you're leaving, then the vultures come in.
Yeah.
I like to get in. That's not what we do. We get in earlier because this way you can still get the true value of your house and you'll end up loving me, versus some guy that comes in the day before you're evicted and he steals the house and you hate him. So that's why we come earlier than later. You ever do that stuff at home?
No, we don't. All right, anyway, we make it drastic. Right? Okay, we make it like we're always painting that worst case scenario for them to work with us.
Got it.
And then painting the great outcome.
Okay. That's happen so with now us. Let's keep going. So I say to you, I don't know. I got time.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. That makes sense. So like, you know, 2-3 months comes by, you're not able to sell your house. It's not a big deal then.
But how much is my house? What can you give me for my house? I guess that's what I want to know.
I'm not sure yet.
Okay. So what do you need to be sure?
Well, I need to make sure that if we're going to work together, that the people that we work with, I don't have all the money in the world. God, I wish I did. I'm not the Wolf of Wall Street, right? I wish I had all the money in the world. So in reality, the people that we talk to, we want to make sure that we're actually helping them. Okay. So, you know, if you're uncomfortable asking these questions or answering these questions, then maybe I should go.
Okay.
Right. So we want to get them to play along, right? The rules we set in the very beginning.
Okay.
So we're going to get to the point where it's painful. Like we're going through the scenario where, you know, we're talking about you're losing the house of foreclosure.
We'll keep going. Let's keep going though. So we're right in the middle. It's going. So you asked me, I want to keep going because it's really interesting to me.
So
let's keep going.
So, yeah. So, you know, 2-3 months goes by, you know, it's not a big deal. You can't sell your house.
Right.
So if the city takes your house in 2 months and you get zero from the sale, you don't mind.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think I have longer than that, but that's just maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Is that what you think I have, only 2 or 3 months?
I mean, before I came over, I had a chance to look at what's going on, and it seems like the city's giving you 60 days from today.
Okay.
So, but if you know, 2 months, your house doesn't sell, and you get zero from the sale, that doesn't seem like it'd be a big deal to you.
No, obviously I don't want that to happen. I just, you know, didn't really look at it that way. I don't think that's going to happen, but... So you're saying that unless I sell to you today, I'm going to get zero for the house?
Not necessarily to me, but if you can't sell it at all.
If I don't sell it right now, I'm going to get zero for the house?
If you don't sell it to anybody within the next 60 days, that's what's going to happen.
So if I don't sell the house, then don't they have to sell my house and I get the money for the house when they sell it?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like the way when attorneys get involved and they're working up the fees... You know who's going to eat first.
Right.
The attorney is going to get paid first, right? Okay. We see this all the time.
Got it.
So, you know, all this equity that you think you have, the other people, the attorneys, they're going to take it all.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess when you say you got time, like how sure are you on that?
I mean, I assumed I had like, you know, about 6 more months, but I don't know.
Yeah. And then the situation right here, you know, with the finances, like right now, is it affecting you anywhere else?
Meaning?
I don't know. Is your wife complaining about this?
I have complaints about everything.
Okay. But it's not causing any problems at home?
No, obviously we're all under pressure here because, you know, it's our house here. We don't want to leave. So we're hoping that, you know, something magical happens here and we don't end up having to leave here.
Oh, what kind of magic?
Just, you know, I have some relatives that maybe can lend me some money or... We can renegotiate with the bank or something or get an extension, you know?
That's awesome. So you've already reached out to those relatives?
I'm in the process.
Got it. Are they really responsive?
Some of them are.
Okay. So you already got the money secured then?
Is this happen?
Yeah, cool. These are the conversations we're having.
I love it.
Right?
Okay. So let's keep going. So you're just basically trying to call them out in their shit.
I am squashing, like, you know... I'm sure you've never been to a strip club, right? But you know, you got that buddy.
I almost married a stripper, by the way.
You have that buddy who keeps going to the ATM, right? Who's convinced the stripper loves him.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to stop him going to the ATM again?
Take his card.
Take his card. Crush his dreams.
Right.
You've got to crush his dreams, and it sucks. But it's you do it out of love.
Right.
Right. So what I'm doing is you've got all these outs that you think you've got when you really don't.
Okay.
And our job is to help you realize, like, those things you've got, they're not as solid as you think.
Okay.
So that's the reason why we do that.
Okay. So what do you say? You think that my best option is to sell the house to you?
I'm going to help you uncover that.
Okay.
Right. So it's kind of like, you know, you think you've got all these different options, and I'm going to help you explore all those options, help you get to the understanding like, oh, those aren't real options.
Okay.
And once we get to that point, then it's like, okay, well, I guess I got to sell my house.
Okay.
And then it's like, please, God, I hope that you can be the one that can rescue me.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So how long does this typically take, this process?
It could be an hour, hour and a half. I've gone as long as 2.5 hours.
What percentage of the people that you get into the home will sell to you?
About 1 in 3.
1 in 3.
Yeah.
Okay, and for the ones that don't sell, but they're still in denial. The question is, are they in denial, these people? Is that really what it is?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they think that someone's going to rescue them. I'll give you an example. We went to this guy's house, and we had offered him $150. And 2 days before foreclosure, we offered him $150, right? He's like, no, I've got options. Like, dude, your foreclosure's in 2 days. He dicks around.
It's a long 2 days.
He dicks around, says no. A buddy of ours calls us. It's like, hey, I've got this house. It's going to foreclosure tomorrow. I'll sell it to you for $155. We're like, what's the address? Like, we've been talking to that guy. We're not buying it for you for $155, right? We call the guy back. It's like, look, you're trying to sell for $155. You've got no time. The guy's like, I've got time. We bought it at the auction for $130, right? He didn't have time, but he was convinced that he did.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So we bought it for way cheaper because he was delusional.
Unbelievable. And that, and then they took his, so he didn't get the $130 though, because it was lawyer's fees involved and everything, right?
Yeah, I don't know what he walked away with, but it's not what he thought he was going to walk away with.
So essentially, this is basically people that are literally, it's like right, you're trying to cash them right at the end.
Close to the end, yes.
How much, so what's the tip, how much time does a typical person really have? Under 30 days, under 60 days?
I would say typically 3 to 6 months, somewhere around there.
3 to 6 months. Yeah. Okay. So I see what you're doing. So what you're basically doing is that you're essentially forcing them. You're coming in with from a position of like ultimate power. Like, I don't really give a shit whether I buy your house or not.
Right.
Right. I have X amount of dollars. If I don't buy you, I only can buy 4 houses this week. Maybe one will be yours. If not yours, I'm going to buy 4 houses.
Mine house.
So yeah, you know, someone's going to buy a house. You know, I don't know if it'll be yours. Right. So, you know, basically just like, you know, let's just get honest with each other here. And let me just ask some questions. And the truth is, so when do you reveal what you'll buy the house for? Do you know, do you know going in? You already know, right? You already know what you're going to pay for it.
Absolutely, we know.
Right, okay. Yeah. So you already know that what that number is, right?
So we go through. So we just go, this is what we call, you know, the pain, right? We're going to extract pain. We're going to help you relive your existing pain.
Got it.
Right? And after that, we're going to talk about price. But I'm not going to share with you my price. My goal is to figure out what Jordan needs from the sale of the home.
Got it.
Right?
And is that going to be a function of what they owe, what they owe the city, what they owe on the mortgage, maybe some credit cards that they're behind on, stuff like that?
Ultimately, that's what it comes down to. Initially, they're looking like, I want to get as close to market value as possible. Right. That's the initial
position. That's a pipe dream for them, right? Yeah.
But that's not the option. And so we go through and we try to uncover, you know, we ask it a few different ways. Hey, Jordan, you know, I'm sure the night before or this morning, you know, you were talking to your fiance. You probably thought about a number you were looking to get. Would you mind sharing with me what you guys discussed?
Mm-hmm. And let's say I said, let's say your price was going to be what, $150?
Let's say my price is $150.
We want to get $175.
$175? Awesome. So it sounds like you're trying to get as close to market value as you can.
Well, I mean, yeah, I am.
That makes sense. I would do the same thing too.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So when you talk to a realtor about selling your property, what did they say?
They told me I could get $175, $180.
Awesome. So why didn't you go with them?
Because it's going to take a few months to do that, and I, you know, don't have, you know, 6 months to sell my house.
Got it. All right. So you did your research. So you realize, like, right, you can't get that.
Right.
So that's then we start the negotiating.
So that's when I said, you asked me, but I said, that's what I'd like.
Yeah. Okay. So I wish I could offer you $175. You know, if you want $175, you know, you can go with the contract, you can go with a realtor, list it for $200. In 3 to 6 months, you get your $175. That you should do that.
Okay.
And then this is when you say, right, like, I can't do that. I don't have that time. It's right. Like, well, then, you know, the way we work is we're never plan A. We're probably not even plan B. We're basically an insurance policy. So if you want to work with us, we can't be at $175.
What's the price?
Well, I mean, let's just, I had a chance to do some market research before I came. I saw some investors in the area. They're paying between $130 and $140. If one of them were to offer you $130 to $140, what would you see yourself doing then?
I'd probably rather have the bank take it than give someone $130 or $140 for this house. I wouldn't let someone steal my house from me.
Got it. Okay.
Do people say that?
People say that all the time. Okay. Yeah, they say it all the
fucking
time.
Fucking pride.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seven deadly sins.
Hey, and that makes sense.
So what do you say to them?
So it sounds like if you were to walk away with $10,000, $20,000, you'd rather walk away with zero.
I'd rather walk away. Yeah, at that point, I'd rather walk away with zero because I just, you know, I just don't, I think that the process of that, like a vulture coming in is just, it's not right. And I don't think someone should do that. I'd rather, you know, have nothing.
Sure. Well, what would be a number that you feel comfortable with?
You know, I understand that. I get it. Like, you know, I don't have the option of selling it. So certainly there's some number between those to more like maybe 160, you know, so, you know, $10,000, $20,000 discount to market, something like that would, you know, I would entertain it.
Well, what if it was 150?
150?
What if they offered
you 150? Well, it's too low because it doesn't solve my problems. I still need, you know, 160, my problems are solved.
All right. So what were those problems again?
Well, I own blah, 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 blah on this, that, yeah, and my credit cards, and then my Aunt Tilly's got gallbladder surgery, and you ever hear them? I'm sure you must hear crazy fucking stuff. My son's got a fucking guitar they want to buy, and that's basically, so all that stuff, honestly, at 160, I walk away at least, you know, my marriage is intact, and I can kind of rebuild from there.
Sure, and that makes sense. So then it sounds like if we're able to cover all your bills, right? You got your maxed out credit cards right now, and we're able to pay it down. We still have a little bit left, not all of it paid off. You're telling me that's not a good plan for you. You'd rather stay in your current situation.
Well, there's two other guys like you, by the way. You're not the only person. I have three people that called me about this. Sure. I guess you guys have. I'm on the list, I guess, right?
You're on the list.
I'm on the hard case list, right? So yeah. I'm sure if I meet with all three of you, after I meet with all three of you, I guess I'm going to take the best offer I get.
Okay. So it sounds like trying to get the most amount of money possible.
Yeah.
Not the most amount of money that goes in your bank.
The most amount I can get from one of the people that's going to buy. Like, I know there's like XYZ company, I spoke to this guy from that company, you're all, I get it, and I don't know, I know you're doing your job and everything, but right. I want obviously the best for me, so I want to see what all three, once I have all three's offer, I'll make a decision.
Sure, but it sounds again like you're trying to get the most amount of money.
Yeah.
Not the most reliable offer.
Well, I assume that if someone's going to come here and waste their time and sit with me for 2 hours, that and we come to a deal, they're going to have the money, so.
Okay, wouldn't that be great?
It would be great.
Yeah. So I was talking to Julie, you know, I actually met with her a couple of months ago and she went with someone else who was higher, which, you know, makes sense. But, you know, her house was packed. She was in her U-Haul, ready to write the next chapter in her story. And she called me crying. You know why she called me crying?
Why?
That higher offer disappeared right before close of escrow.
Mm. So how do I know your offer is not going to disappear before escrow?
What would you need to see?
I would want from anybody, whichever offer I want, I'm going to want to have, you know, the proof that the funds are available. I'm going to want to have myself protected as much as possible.
Sure. So if I can give you that, you feel comfortable?
I would. Yeah. I'm going to want that from all three.
Okay. And so if you don't get it from the other two, then...
Well, if I didn't get it from... Yeah. If the other two offer me $155,
mm-hmm,
and you offer me $150, but they won't put anything in writing or give me this something, I'd go for $150. But again, I need to see all three offers and see what each one's offering because you all guys all say the same thing.
Sure, we all sound the same.
Right.
So,
well, you sound a little bit nicer. I like you. But still, again, like, you know, I know, I understand. I got myself into this situation here, yeah, and but I need to make sure that I'm to get my money, mm-hmm, and I don't see why you'd be any better than the next guy unless there's a reason for that.
So I don't know. I may have misheard. Did I hear you say 155? That's a number that you feel comfortable with?
I said if two people came in at 155, I'd like to get 160. Okay. I'm just saying hypothetically, if two people came in a bit higher than you, but let's say you came in at 150, you had a check, certified check from the bank, right? And I knew that was real, and they were saying I'll pay you next Tuesday, I'd probably go with you. What I want to do is I want to get all three offers and see who's, you know, all together has got the best package, and that's what I'm gonna go with.
Sure. You seem like a really sharp guy. Here's what I want to do. You have a pen and paper?
Sure.
And I would just ask you to write down a list of questions because at this point, I'm going to bounce.
You are. Right? Do people do that to you, though?
What's that?
Like, am I?
No, this is normal.
This is normal.
This is normal.
I'm trying to keep this as normal. Yeah. No, I'm not trying to be a dick. I'm trying to be to hear this. I think it's really helpful for salespeople because you're doing a good job so far. I'm just trying to see where does it, like when you get to these sort of, this is probably the ones where like, so here's the thing. What I see with salespeople is like, average people can close the easy ones.
Yeah.
But the question is, what about the ones that are a bit tougher and they start to push you? How do you get around those? What's the strategy to close those?
Yeah. So in this instance, I would just give you what we call we scorch the earth, right? So I'm going to start giving you a bunch of landmines. So when these two other clowns come in after me, they're going to get blown up and you're going to be calling me back.
Tell me.
So I say, hey, Jordan, make sure whoever you talk to has a $10,000 non-refundable earnest money deposit.
Stop. Listen. So number one, is it fair to... So what of the three... You said you closed one of three,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
So let's say you get into 10 homes. You're going to close three, more or less.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Of those three, of 100 homes, you're going to close 30. What percentage close on the first call versus subsequent callbacks?
A majority for us close on the first call.
What percentage?
I mean, I would say like 80, 70, 80.
Okay. So the vast majority closed there, right? Mm-hmm. And so how far, this is a really interesting point. How far do you push it before you say, you know what? Obviously, you're not ready. You're in denial, or you know, you need to see other people. Mm-hmm. I just really hope that, you know, honestly, I only can buy a couple of houses each month. All right. I only have one or two. I have a few people, a few. I might not be around. So my offer, you say my offer expires today or no?
No, I don't say my offer expires because it,
I just sounds kind of. I can't guarantee.
You call me tomorrow, my money might be
I might be gone already, right? Yeah. Is that what you do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Absolutely. How often, is there a certain strategy you use? Like, do you have a set strategy? Like, if it gets to this, here's what you do.
Yeah.
Like, say exactly this, get up and walk out, or almost start walking through the door, or. Yeah,
the doorknob closed.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. We just think it sounds like it's over.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like that we're going to be able to come to terms today.
Well, I wish we could, but it just seems like, you know, you're not kind of being flexible enough, so.
Yeah, I wish I could pay more, right? I wish I could. So reality is, you know, what you need, we can't offer that, so it sounds like it's over.
All right, well, listen, thank you for coming by. I appreciate it. And listen, if the other ones fall through or your turns out to be, I'd like to be able to call you back.
I would love for you to call me back. I just don't know if I'll have the money then.
Okay.
And then this is when we give you a list of questions to blow up the other.
Okay, so what would the questions be?
Make sure you get an earnest money check for $10,000 that's non-refundable, right? Which no one offers that.
Would you do it?
Absolutely would. Yeah. So, we close, if we contract, we close 100% of our deals. We don't do this thing where we contract somebody and we cancel, which is unfortunately.
Does it happen a lot?
Happens a lot in our industry. So we close 100% of our deals that we contract. So we have no problems putting 10,000 earnest.
So right. Do you tell that to them up front or?
We'll tell that to them if we can't get a deal.
Got it.
So it's like, okay, it sounds like it's over. Let me, you know, you seem really nice. I want to make sure you're taken care of. I don't want anyone else taking advantage of you. And then we'll give you these list of questions. So 10,000 non-refundable, proof of funds with their name on it, right? That there's no, that today when I walked through your home, this was my inspection period. No one's walking through after me. So if you contract with them, they might tell you they got some partners or someone else walking through. No, that's other people they're trying to sell the house to. Make sure no one else walks through your home.
Got it.
So that's what we coach them on. And what basically happens afterwards, they call me and it's like, hey, Steve, boy, you were right. Those guys don't even have 10,000 to their name.
Right.
I'd rather go with you.
Got it. So is part of that strategy to try to get them to turn around in the moment, like without you leaving the house? So as you listen, fair enough. Well, let me just give you some things you need to really watch out for here. Because unless they want to do these things, you know, you're probably to get taken for a ride here.
Exactly.
So like, get your pen and paper, write this down. Number one, they got to show you this. Right now, if I was to do this, I would be handing you a check right now for $10,000. And I would show you proof of funds in my name.
Yeah.
Anyone that can't do that is going to be literally a fly by night. I've seen it 1,000 times. So unless I'm going to do it right now, just so you know, so you could have 10,000. Do you like try to like get them to say, you know what? I want to go with you there or.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's
your goal.
That's the goal. They're like, wow, this Steve guy really cares about me. He's looking out for me. I'd rather just go with him.
Okay. And so where do most of these sales close? Do they close towards the beginning? Like, how much abuse and pain does it take? Like, what is the point? Where obviously you don't want to give someone more pain than is needed, because what's the point? You want to, there's a sweet spot of like sort of how much you want to sort of make them step into that and then close, right?
Yeah.
So like what is there some sort of like what are you looking for them before they throw up the white flag?
We're looking for like, you know, I'm frustrated, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, pissed off. Like we're looking for those kinds of words, right? Because if you're at the point where this is no big deal, I've got time, you're not ready to hear an offer, right? You'd be like, I'm frustrated, I'm tired of dealing with this, you know, I'm losing sleep. These are kinds of things we're looking for.
Are you typically the first one of your type that's there, or you're not? Like, how?
It's random? Complete toss-up, yeah. Yeah, because we're in Phoenix, which is one of the most competitive markets for buying houses. I mean, all the freaking iBuyers are there too, right? So we're not guaranteed to be the first. Our goal is to be the first, but everyone's marketing to these people.
Got it.
So there's no guarantee when we'll walk in.
What do you think are the biggest mistakes that salespeople in your industry make? Let's say they get to the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where does the problem start?
So the two biggest mistakes is A, not setting the expectations, right? like, here's what's going to happen. Because if you don't set the expectations how this process is going to work, then what's going to happen is the homeowner has this idea. Why don't you walk through my house? Give me a number. I'll call you back in 2 days. And you see what happens. Like, how many times have you been in a situation where like you submit an RFP and then you won the deal?
Right.
It's not the best way to play the game.
Right.
So that's the first thing. Second thing is giving the price too early. Right. And for me, I'm a transparent person. I'm an honest person. I want to give you the number. You ask me the number. I want to give it to you. But I can't because we have to play this dating game. That's what sales is. It's dating.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I see a lot of newer people give the price too early. And what happens if you give the price too early? You haven't built rapport. They haven't gotten emotional. So it's entirely intellectual. And so what happens is the way I like to describe this is like if you were to go today, you know, you go see your primary care physician mm-hmm. and you go in there for back pain. It's like, doctor, my lower back is hurting. You know, I don't know what I did. He's like, no problem. Come back tomorrow. 3 o'clock. We'll operate. Like, what? You freak out. You would get another pain.
I've had that happen. Yeah.
So you want a doctor that cares. They're going to ask you, well, what's going on? How long has this been happening? What do you do to fix it?
Mm-hmm.
Same questions I asked you earlier when you're talking about missing your mortgage payments,
mm-hmm.
right? You want someone to ask these questions because asking questions demonstrates that you care, mm-hmm. but also as they're talking more, they feel like you understand.
Sure. How about the tonality in which you ask questions? Like, what type of tonality are you using with them? Are you focusing on that? Or
there's a lot of, I mean, just to borrow very generously from Chris Voss, a lot of late night FM DJ voice, a lot of downward inflection. You know, sounds like you're frustrated, might be giving up on there. Right? There's a lot of downward inflection by design.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of these things we say with the wrong inflection can totally trigger a person and destroy all rapport.
For
example, sounds sarcastic. Oh, you probably got this figured out. It's like, well, back off, buddy. It's like, you know, I say, well, Jordan, it sounds like you got this figured out.
Right.
It's like, well, no, I don't have it figured out.
Right.
You know, so it's just same words, but one said with empathy, one right. said like a smartass.
Mm-hmm.
Smartass gets thrown out the door.
And how about the order in which you ask? Do you have like a certain order which you unpack your questions?
Absolutely. So it's, you know, what? Tell me more about it. What have you tried to do about it? When's the last time you experienced it? What have you done to fix it? How did that work out? What else have you tried? Who else knows about this? You know, especially talking about foreclosure. Who else knows about the foreclosure?
Right.
You know, how's it affecting things at home? You know, your wife. What's your wife saying? You know, when your wife saw the foreclosure notice stapled to the door, what did she say?
Right. Got it. So what are you, so in your industry, so you're just dealing in Phoenix?
Our business is in Phoenix. Well, we're just expanded to Oklahoma. So, you know, in the next 36 days, we'll be in Oklahoma as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you looking to hire salespeople or you want to hire? So what are you looking to, like, hire people to do what?
For us, as far as hiring, we're looking to hire salespeople that are coachable and can follow this process. And salespeople, God love them, they're not the easiest to manage, right? And so you get someone that's really good, what we tend to see is the person that's a great salesperson
right.
tends to also be entrepreneurial,
right.
tends to have shiny object syndrome.
Right.
And so when you hire them, they'll be good and they'll be your competition.
Right.
Right. So that's been like the great enigma, if we can figure out that problem. So we're looking at ourselves.
You're training people who are becoming your competition.
Absolutely. And right. I experienced this, like I got licensed in 2007. I've experienced it on the realtor side as well. Like my entire career, if I trained a salesperson, eventually became a competition. You just accept that.
Have you ever tried to train people to become your competition?
I actually had a guy who said during the interview, you know, it's like, you know, where do you see yourselves in 12 months? Like in 12 months, you know, I'm probably competing against you. It's like, I love this attitude.
Right.
If you'll come in here and
Have you ever tried doing that? Like, in other words, have you ever thought about
promoting that?
Well, those that like if it's happening to you automatically, like making it telling like, oh, how about I'm going to put you in business and take a third of your action and make them sign, like, you know, get them working for you under a revenue split type of thing. Not enough margin in there for you.
That's a good idea. We haven't tried that. We haven't given that approach. Something right. we'll check out.
I mean, I would think that like there are some industries that are just like that,
mm-hmm.
where if you try to hold someone down, they're just going to leave you, right?
Right. Yeah. You can't try to hold someone down. Non-competes are barely enforceable.
Yeah.
So,
for example, like in the brokerage business, if you try to make someone, all right, I'm hiring you as my cold caller,
mm-hmm.
and you're never going to be a stockbroker, It's not going to, I mean, how long can that last before someone's going to be a stockbroker too, right?
Right.
So what you typically do is you give someone an ascension model.
Yeah.
Right? So you allow them to come to work for you and they, you know, they're like in the beginning, they're at the lowest level. They slowly start after X number of deals, they get to a high level of revenues. But eventually you could maybe extend it and get a few years out of someone. And then rather than make them competition, say, have this, why don't you move to another market and I'll set you up and we'll open up an office together and we'll split 50-50. And you have people that are killers that you train now running your business for you in other markets. So you have 10 markets you're in.
You know, it's funny. This is an actual conversation we had last Friday because one of the guys, a member of my organization, suggested this idea to me. So Steve, why don't you have 10 people come work for you?
Why don't you?
And then whichever one you like the best, partner with them. It's like, that's
does this industry, yeah, I think you should. Does this industry function in a down market?
Absolutely. It does. It's more profitable in the down market.
Why is that?
Because people get scared, right? You know, I can't remember who said it, but you know, when the blood is in the streets, buy real estate.
Right.
Right. So when everyone's scared, because like right now, everyone's thinking, oh, you can make money in this market because the market's appreciating. When the market's depreciating, I experienced it. I started in 2007. When the market's depreciating, everyone's scared. Mm. And if everyone's scared, then the homeowner has to sell it for a steeper discount. So guys, right now, we're trying to make $15,000 on a wholesale transaction. Back in the day, people were making $40,000 regularly on a wholesale transaction because right now you're trying to buy a house for about 75% of market value, approximately. Right. Back during 2007 through 2009, targeting 45 to 55% of market value.
God.
It's a lot more margin because there's a lot of people, a lot fewer people trying to buy it. Money is tight, right? Like they're printing money like it's going out of style.
Unbelievable, right?
That was not happening
in 2007. Does that scare you at all, by the way?
It terrifies me. So for the first time ever, I shared this with a few friends, for the first time in my life, I'm actually fearful that the American dollar is going to be, it's not going to be the gold standard, right? It's going to...
It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
One would think that, you know, there's only so much money you can print, but...
No, they can print more.
Well, I mean, it's like this idea that, like, you know, how far can you kick the can down the road? I mean, the Federal Reserve has become experts at seemingly kicking the can down the road forever, right?
Well, if only there was, you know, some sort of history, maybe in Germany or Argentina or somewhere other... In the past 100 years where we can see what happens when you print money.
So the difference, I'll tell you what it is. There's a couple of things that are supporting it. Number one is that the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency for the world. Mm-hmm. So when you're the world's reserve currency, for now, it gives you certain liberties, so to speak.
Right.
Also, there's like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Argo. It's a really funny movie.
Yeah.
It's a, like, Ben Affleck. This is the best bad option. Like the dollar is the best bad option there are. Like every currency is inflated and overprinted. So it's almost like in the world of shit, which is the least shitty shit, basically, right?
Yeah.
And then the only alternative maybe would be the yuan, but who the fuck wants the yuan? Because then, you know, if your social credit score drops below a certain point that they think is the right score, maybe your digital yuan's now not in your account suddenly because it was never there to start, right? So that's, I think, part of it. But you're right, though, it's a terrifying thing. Do you see... So you're just strictly in this vertical of real estate.
I am in real estate and I'm happy in real estate now. I think I need to start diversifying. You know, I got a lot of friends in the real estate world doing really well in real estate, looking really hard at crypto. And so for me, it's like, I'm in a mastermind. Everyone here is a lot smarter than me and making a lot more money than me. And they're all diversifying in the crypto. They obviously know something. I should take it more seriously and investigate, which... I'm finally starting to open that door.
Got it. Well, listen, like anything else, you know, everyone's a genius when something's going up. So crypto's going up, so everyone's going into crypto, right? So I think that it's smart to be in real estate, by the way. Because I think if you look historically, people make fortunes in real estate. Real markets go up, markets go down. But if you know what you're doing, you have a way of making money. It's definitely, I wouldn't abandon it for, let's just say, I'm not saying you shouldn't diversify, but I wouldn't abandon it because people are making money in crypto.
I mean, by real estate, 30%. I mean, it'd be really hard to screw that up. 30% off, it'd be really hard to screw that up.
Are you looking for people to train? So what's your business right now is based on? I have your own business where you make money. Is there another business you have where you're looking to bring people into mentor?
Yeah, so one thing I'm looking at is I want to diversify as far as the sales training component. You know, right now we do really well on the real estate sales training, right? How to buy houses at a lower price. But there's only so many people in real estate, right? I mean, it's a pond. I'm doing really well in that pond, but the pond is a certain size.
Right.
Whereas the rest of the country, there's 350 million people. I think we were trying to look up like how many entrepreneurs there are in the United States. And
there's a lot.
Millions.
Yeah.
Right. So the pool of potential buyers for a $97 a month product, whatever like that, is huge. Right. And so look, what I'm looking to eventually diversify into is having a sales training platform for someone that maybe runs a medical practice,
right?
Runs a, I don't know, stereo repair, you know, not a car wash, but you know, something where they can't afford to spend thousands of dollars on training.
Got it.
Right. We're trying to fit a window for someone that needs sales training, recognize they need sales training, but can't afford to spend how much sales training normally costs. Like,
awesome.
So
what's the best way for someone that's listening to reach you? What's your...
The best way is on Instagram, Steve Trang, STEVE.TRANG. That's the best way to get a hold of me. We also have our YouTube channel, Real Estate Disruptors. But yeah, Instagram is definitely the best way to get a hold of me.
All right, buddy, listen, check him out, Steve Trang. Listen, I've grilled you. I like the style. You know, I mean, listen, I think that a lot of this is also to come down to the person really mastering the art of, you know, tonality, asking the questions. I'm sure there's a lot more as you go deeper into this thing, into the training, but
there is.
Like it. I think it's a great thing, and I think you should start expanding by getting people to kind of work for you and set them up. Don't make them force them to leave. Set them up to leave, but take a piece of it, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
All right, buddy. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Take care. You got it.